This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Triple threat. The Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P 500 all close at records. A lot has been going right for investors. Question is, will it continue? Paying the rent, RVs line the streets of Silicon Valley right next to those multi-million dollar homes. And now some say the housing crisis in parts of California could get even worse. New risk, why investors need to watch the flurry of sexual harassment claims. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Tuesday, November 21st. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Sue Herrera. Tyler Matheson is off tonight. Recipe for a rally. Profits are strong, global growth is steady, and inflation is low. For investors, that means there are few alternatives to stocks. And that's exactly where people are putting their money today, sending all three major indexes to all-time highs. The Dow Jones Industrial Average advanced 160 points to 23,590. The NASDAQ gained 71, and the S&P 500 added 16, closing just below 2,600. But how much more is left in this stock market tank? Mike Santoli takes a look.
The economy is humming. The Dow just touched a fresh record high, and hopes are building for progress on a tax cut after Thanksgiving. A lot has been going right for investors, yet it's worth asking if the markets are close to using up all the good news. Stock indexes did manage to push slightly into all-time high territory on Tuesday, but the move came after the broad market has been stalled for nearly a month, and it's taken quite a lot of positive news to support the market. A measure of how strong economic reports have been relative to forecasts has surged in recent months toward a five-year high. Corporate profits were quite good in the third quarter, yet on average, stocks failed to rise notably after companies reported good results. And the government bond market has confounded economic optimists by keeping long-term Treasury yields steady, often a sign of muted expectations for future growth. None of this argues that the stock market is at any crucial peak or is sending scary signals about the economy. All year, stocks have advanced in an orderly way, with periods of sideways movement along the way. We could just be in for another of those idling phases right now. Yet as strategists fashion their 2018 market predictions, they're grappling with the reality that stocks are richly valued, the indexes have grown more dependent on a cluster of huge tech companies, and the Federal Reserve seems determined to push interest rates higher at a quicker pace. As for possible corporate tax cuts, they're largely viewed as a positive for stocks should they arrive by early 2018. In fact, Goldman Sachs assumes such a cut will pass as the firm projects a further 9% gain for U.S. stocks in 2018. The question now is whether corporate profit forecasts and stock values have started to price in the benefits of tax cuts already. If so, those cuts could prove one more bit of good news the market is using up. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Mike Santoli at the New York Stock Exchange.
Mona Mahajan joins us now to talk more about these markets. She is the U.S. investment strategist at Allianz Global Investors. Welcome, Mona. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having
me.
You
were nodding your head in agreement during Mike's report there.
Yeah.
The market has a lot of good news that it is looking at. How much of it do you think really is factored in?
Yeah. So, you know, Sue, I think right now we're at a unique time in history where there is a confluence of positive events supporting this market. That's earnings, that's economics, and that's low rates. As Mike touched upon, which has led to low inflation. You also have this positive overhang from tax reform. Now, I think tax reform, that question will be answered likely next week. If the Senate can pass a tax bill, I think we'll get strong momentum into year end. But I do see I'm more cautiously optimistic for 2018. There are a couple of reasons that the markets may take a breather. One is the Fed. As we mentioned, I think the Fed is going to come into play. I think they will hike three times in 2018. They will continue balance sheet tapering. And I think that takes liquidity out of the system. So that's one thing. The second thing is the tax reform bill itself. We're going to have to then roll up our sleeves, parse through who are the winners, who are the losers.
Right.
You know, it's not going to be good for everyone across the board. So there are a couple things coming next year that I think could pause this market a little bit.
Also, is this market kind of priced for perfection? Because tax reform, if they've already factored that in, as you mentioned, the devil is in the details and earnings.
Yep.
They've been good, but what if in 2018 are they going to repeat? So for a long-term investor, do you just continue to do, you know, your monthly allocation into the stock market, or
do you put in a little protection or become a little bit more cautious?
Yeah, so, you know, we definitely still recommend equity exposure here. We would maybe shift it a little bit. You know, growth has had a great run. Mm-hmm. Maybe shift a little bit into value names. We would recommend some of the names that have maybe not performed as well, but have maybe potential going forward. Financials, energy sector, which has shown some momentum here as well. But generally, we think that there's a couple of factors next year as well that people may not see coming, which is inflation and wage growth in particular. Mm-hmm. We see unemployment now is at the lowest rate post-crisis. We're at 4.1% unemployment rate. If that continues to fall further downward, we don't see how wage growth can't emerge in this market. And once wage growth emerges, the Fed is going to be on high alert that they're behind the curve, and we might see even, you know, rate hikes continue further.
Does the new composition of the Fed, you know, Janet Yellen mm-hmm. is going to step down as soon as Jerome Powell takes the oath to yeah. be Fed chief. Does the new composition of the Fed change your projections at all, or did it change your projections at all in terms of the number of interest rate hikes?
Well, so, you know, Jerome Powell was known as the continuity candidate. So in terms of interest rate hikes or Fed rate hikes themselves, no real change there. The one change we did see from Powell, from Yellen to Powell, is deregulation. Mm-hmm. So Powell is a little bit more favorable on deregulation, whereas Yellen was saying that we really need those post-crisis regulations to remain in place. Powell is saying, you know what, we're way past the crisis now. Maybe we pull that back.
Okay.
And that's another supportive factor for financials, which is why we like that sector
well,
as well.
We will see. Have a lovely Thanksgiving
Thank you.
Holiday.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. You too.
Mona Mahajan joining us with Allianz Global Investors. Home sales in October bounced back as both Houston and Florida rebounded faster than realtors expected. But the trouble nationally is high prices and a severe shortage of listings, and it's only getting worse. And now there is a new concern that the Republican tax plan might make housing more expensive. Our Diana Olick takes a look.
Living room is off to the right.
In northern New Jersey, where both home prices and property taxes are high.
Let's go take a look.
Realtor Matt Donegan says he's getting an earful from potential buyers.
I know you definitely like the fireplace over there.
And sellers about the Republican tax plan now moving through Congress.
There's concerns about the mortgage interest deduction. There's concerns about the caps on some of the tax rates. There's concerns that because we're in such a higher tax area, it will make a big difference for them. There's places here in New Jersey where the taxes are $20,000 plus for a house that is not a mega mansion.
All those things will make a difference in the overall cost of a home, which continues to soar nationwide as the supply of homes for sale, especially starter homes, hit a new record low. First-time buyers Laura Mejia and Chris Marcano want to buy soon.
I would like to say in the next 2 months, but I also said that 6 months ago, so.
And this is the other bedroom?
But the market is not cooperating.
We've actually been looking in varying price ranges, in different price ranges. So somewhere in the upper echelon of our price range, people will completely just blind bid on houses. They won't even go and take a look at the house in person, and they'll blind bid on it before we even get there.
There's one closet there.
Chris and Laura say they know the tax plan could take away valuable real estate deductions, but they're still sold on home ownership.
We want to go ahead and obviously invest our money into our future, and we feel that purchasing a home is the best way to invest your money.
As for the competition, they're hoping the winter months will put a chill on some of that heat. Of course, winter also means fewer listings. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
Across the country, California could also get hit hard by the proposed tax plan, given the high cost of housing. Aditi Roy reports tonight from Mountain View, California.
Mountain View, California is in the heart of Silicon Valley. Home to Google, it's a community where even the most modest homes along tree-lined streets will cost you seven figures. The median price of a home here, about $1.6 million. But just a stone's throw from multi-million-dollar homes, on the other side of the train tracks, you'll find a community of RVs. The people who live in them can't afford renting or buying.
Even the trailer parks are so expensive, too, though.
Joman Perez is one of those workers. He speaks little English, but he told us through a translator he works as a car detailer, making about $14 an hour. He rented an apartment here until 2 years ago, until it became too expensive. So he moved into this RV.
Yeah, it's hard to live like that, though.
His story, just one example of the housing crisis in the Bay Area. That crisis, say experts, is a result of the housing supply not keeping up with the new jobs created by the tech boom.
The Bay Area is ground zero for the housing crisis.
And now some experts believe it could get worse. The GOP tax plan passed by the House would cut the mortgage interest deduction from $1 million to $500,000. It would also cap state and local property tax deductions at $10,000, lower than what many homeowners pay annually. Some believe the plan would have the worst impact on Bay Area housing than any other part of the country because prices are already so high and inventory so low.
The Bay Area has a confluence of factors that really have kept prices high and affordability low.
Redfin just put out a report saying the number of homes for sale in San Jose tumbled nearly 52%. In San Francisco, that number fell 28%. And Santa Clara County reports between 2015 to 2017, the number of homeless increased in Cupertino, home of Apple, by 74%. In Mountain View, that number went up 51%. The crisis has led to clashes between local governments and residents. Just last week, amid protests, East Palo Alto officials booted a row of RVs parked on a city street. Perez says he has to move his RV every 72 hours or risk expensive tickets. He says he won't be able to live like this much longer.
Talking about maybe a year because it's hard, though.
The housing crisis has even prompted the emergence of political parties locally centered around the notion of YIMBY, or Yes in My Backyard. They're aimed at pushing for more policies that increase the housing inventory. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, Mountain View, California.
Still ahead, AT&T takes out its boxing gloves. It's ready for a big legal fight. The CEO of Hewlett-Packard Enterprises is stepping down early next year. Meg Whitman said it's time for a new generation of leaders to take the reins. Whitman joined the company in 2011 and recently refocused it to be better competitive with its rivals. The shares fell on that news in initial after-hours trading. As we reported yesterday, the Justice Department is challenging AT&T's proposed $85 billion takeover of Time Warner. And now investors are trying to figure out what happens next to one of the largest proposed media mergers in American history? Julia Boorstin takes a look.
A legal battle is on. AT&T says it's ready to go to trial immediately against the Department of Justice. AT&T sharing its position on this website and saying consumers will not be hurt by the deal.
If anything, this merger is going to cause people's cable bills or their TV bills to go down, not up.
That's the issue under scrutiny. Is AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner anti-competitive? Most analysts weighing in today say precedent supports AT&T's acquisition. The Department of Justice has not blocked a vertical merger like this one in nearly 50 years. But analyst Craig Moffitt says it's not a slam dunk for either side. Complicated in a landscape where a merged AT&T Time Warner would be both a supplier and a rival to other media giants.
70% of Time Warner content is sold to someone other than AT&T itself. It's sold to Comcast, to Charter, to Dish Network, and so on. AT&T, because they directly compete with those companies as distributors through DirecTV, has an incentive to raise the cost to their competitors, and that will ultimately raise prices to consumers. That's argument number one.
With both Disney and Comcast interested in buying Fox's entertainment assets, what happens next in this case will be watched closely as an indicator of whether future media deals will be approved. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Julia Boorstin in Los Angeles.
The Federal Communications Commission unveiled plans today to repeal Obama-era rules governing the Internet, a move that could give Internet providers broad powers to determine what websites and online services their customers can see and use. The vote on new rules is scheduled for next month. Roger Chang is the executive editor at CNET. He joins us now to talk about why this is important and what it could mean for you. Good to see you, Roger. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the big fear here with this move now?
The big fear is that by dismantling these rules, this really opens the door to internet service providers blocking or slowing down traffic they don't want and prioritizing the traffic they do, whether it's, you know, their own services or companies who are willing to pay a premium to ensure that their services get to the customer as fast as possible.
But what about oversight of that? Would that be allowed with this rollback of these particular regulations?
I mean, that is the gist of what the FCC is dismantling. Before this happened, there were clear laws in place to keep internet service providers from treating internet traffic unfairly, right? The ground principles of net neutrality. And so with this action that FCC Chairman Ajit Pai took today and the vote coming next month, that basically means that these companies don't have any rule of law to follow, that they can – we basically have to trust these companies to honor the principles of net neutrality.
If you could – let's say the vote goes through and this rollback occurs, what will be the impact on consumers, the biggest impact on consumers?
You know, it's unclear whether there will be a lot of near-term impact. I think over the long term, you're going to start to see once these companies, you know, if these companies do prioritize traffic, theoretically, I guess the worst-case scenario is that a lot of these services will get charged and pass down those costs to consumers. So theoretically, and the fear is that customers will end up having to pay more. Mm-hmm. One of the other bigger concerns is, while a company like Netflix is large enough to weather this and pay that premium, you know, the next Netflix, the next small startup trying to disrupt everything with the new service, might not be able to get in so easily.
Yeah. Are they looking to impose new rules or simply eliminate or roll back the rules that are on the book now? It sounds like they're not looking to replace. They're looking to just repeal.
Yeah, exactly. So the rules that were put in place 2 years ago, they are dismantling them and they are not putting anything in place. All the proposals asked for is that these internet service providers are transparent with what they do in terms of how they manage their network. But again, that's not a law, that's not a rule that governs how these companies can act.
Interesting. We will wait and see. Roger, thanks so much. Roger Chang with CNET. Signet Jewelers loses some luster. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The specialty jewelry retailer cut its guidance for 2018, saying it expects earnings and same-store sales to disappoint next year. The company's quarterly results were also disappointing. The owner of Kay's Jewelers and Zales reported a loss and a steeper-than-expected decline in same-store sales, saying fewer customer transactions and weather-related issues were to blame. It was also hit by disruptions to the outsourcing of its credit portfolio. Signet shares finished the day down 30% to $52.79. The shoe retailer DSW said the severe hurricane season took a bite out of its results. The company missed both profit and sales estimates and also cut its profit expectations this year. DSW also said it hasn't seen demand pick up for yet anyway for its cold weather products. Shares slipped 13% to end the day at $19.55. And the hurricanes actually helped Lowe's results. The home improvement retailer reported same-store sales that climbed more than expected as shoppers rushed in to buy emergency supplies and products to repair their damaged properties. The company topped revenue and earnings expectations and said it expects sales to rise about 5% by the end of fiscal 2017. Nonetheless, shares fell 1% to $80.59. And the medical device maker Medtronic blew past Wall Street's profit estimates thanks to an uptick in sales of heart valve replacements. Revenue was also ahead of estimates. That beat comes even as Medtronic said its results were weakened by the hurricanes and also those big wildfires in the U.S. The shares rose nearly 5% to $82.66. A founder of Pixar is taking a leave of absence. John Lasseter said he made missteps that made some staffers feel disrespected or uncomfortable. Lasseter is the force behind popular franchises like Toy Story, Cars, and Frozen. Also today, PBS and CBS fired journalist Charlie Rose after a number of women accused him of sexual harassment. Our next guest is here to tell us why these issues should be top of mind for investors. She is Lauren Rublin, and she is Barron's Deputy Managing Editor. Good to see you, Lauren. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, obviously, this is top of mind in the headlines, certainly, but it hasn't always been for investors and for companies. But what are the consequences if investors and companies don't pay attention to these issues?
Well, I think the consequences are that you get more issues, and companies find themselves in a lot of trouble, both financially and otherwise, and it gets harder to recruit people, to retain people, and to interest investors in your stocks.
Mm-hmm. Also, mutual funds, I would think, especially those that are socially conscious, would be less apt to allocate money to companies that have had these issues or that they find are not addressing potential issues. Is that a correct read?
I think that's absolutely correct. Mutual fund managers whom we've spoken to have said they actively avoid companies that are embroiled in sexual harassment issues, particularly lawsuits, because they feel it's a business risk.
What about boards, you know, company boards at publicly traded companies? Does it really fall to them or to the CEO, perhaps, to set the tone and the culture of a company, or maybe both?
Well, I think it falls to both. It's not typically been an issue that's reached the boardroom level, but I think that is definitely going to change after all the revelations of recent weeks. And surveys have been done showing that boards, at least up until now, have not focused on the risk factors related to sexual harassment and sexist behavior in the workplace, but it's going to become a bigger issue for boards to tackle.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm an individual investor and I want to make sure that my investment is quote unquote safe in case there are issues at a company, how do I do that homework? What do I look for and look at?
Well, I think you want to read the news, obviously, and I think you can go through corporate documents, look for risk factors, look at legal issues surrounding a company. And I think you want to make sure that you're investing in companies that have mechanisms for employees to report behavior that's questionable or troublesome, and that you have companies where there have been issues where management takes an aggressive posture in trying to put an end to problems and reform corporate culture.
Does gender diversity play a role in how responsive a company is or is not to potential situations? Or perhaps not?
I don't know that it plays a role, but it certainly is a factor in dealing with things like this. One of the things investors are looking for is more diversity throughout employment levels and more diversity on the board because of the feeling that in a more diverse workplace generally, culture is likely to be more responsive to issues that arise. Mm-hmm. And definitely different viewpoints and generally happier employees when you have a much more diverse environment.
On that note, Lauren, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lauren Rublin with Barron's. Coming up, Small Business Matters.
I'm Kate Rogers in Edina, Minnesota, and tonight on Nightly Business Report, we're going to tell you how potential changes to NAFTA could impact small manufacturers like this one.
Small business plays a big role in the economy. They conduct a lot of cross-border commerce. That's why Main Street is paying close attention to the trade negotiations underway now between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Kate Rogers is in Edina, Minnesota tonight.
At PGC Solutions in Edina, Minnesota, owner Susan Carey Hansen is keeping a close eye on the renegotiation of NAFTA. The small manufacturer exports custom parts for big companies like John Deere and Bobcat to both Mexico and Canada, representing nearly 10% of its business.
My biggest concern as an owner is not knowing the impact to us and then how is that going to affect our end customer. I do know that shipping to Mexico or Canada, our customers are not going to take a price increase.
While President Trump has called the trade deal one of the worst in history, promising to overhaul it, renegotiation has proven challenging. The fifth round of talks among trade ministers from the three countries wrapped up Tuesday, with more talks scheduled early next year. The International Trade Association says that in 2015, small manufacturers like PGC accounted for some 98% of U.S. exporting companies. So despite being a powerful force when it comes to exporting, changes to NAFTA could prove challenging for some small companies. Advocacy groups like the nonpartisan National Small Business Association are supportive of free trade agreements like NAFTA, and in fact say only about 5% of their membership report being negatively impacted by free trade. But not all small companies are concerned about potential changes to the trade deal. Barry Wood, vice president of marketing at his family's business, Wood's Power Grip in Laurel, Montana, doesn't anticipate a trade war escalating or new tariffs being put in place overnight. Bilateral deals, as Trump has floated, could even work well to leverage negotiating power, he said.
I don't think we would end up with a trade deal with one and not the other. I think eventually we would have both countries on board.
But some, like Marvin Smith, owner of Optima Products in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, are worried about having to entirely rethink business if NAFTA is overhauled. Smith imports about 70% of his healthcare products from a partner in Quebec City, Canada. His take is simple.
I just don't think that with the economy buzzing and humming the way it is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
For Nightly Business Report, I'm Kate Rogers in Edina, Minnesota.
And you can read more about what NAFTA means to small business owners on our website, nbr.com. And that will do it for Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us. Have a great evening, and we'll see you right back here tomorrow.